The Guardian.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with James Richardson from The Guardian.
Day two, the action moves east, and so does the pod. Touching down in Ukraine, where it's Lviv and let die for Portugal against Germany, while Denmark's performance means that the Dutch may not be clogging up their group for too much longer. All of that, plus a tip-top look forward to the big games on Sunday. There's Croatia-Ireland and, of course, Spain-Italy. All of that in today's Euro 2012 Football Daily. The fun doesn't stop here. We moved across to Ukraine, and the atmosphere, if anything, is even more exciting, as I'm joined now by Scott Murray. Hi, Scott.
Hi there, James.
Hey. Ooh. Ooh. Lovely stuff. And there's Jacob Steinberg.
Hi, James.
Hi, Jacob. And is that... I think it is. James Horncastle.
It is Jacob Horncastle.
Jacob Horncastle. Right.
For one day only.
Right. What did you make of the shift across borders? The atmosphere shifted a little bit with it, didn't it? It was a little bit flatter. I mean, I'm not saying how exciting it is here. I mean, you can hear for yourself. But at the stadium, so it was a little bit flatter day two.
Yeah, certainly the Holland and... Denmark game, the atmosphere was a bit flatter because, I mean, there were a few empty seats, I think, in Cardiff.
Looked that way, didn't it? Although the Dutch habit of wearing orange shirts means that sometimes they look like entire rows of empty seats.
Indeed.
What about how did the Dutch look on field to you? And careful, because we have to say, first of all, very well done to Denmark.
Yeah, they got a little bit lucky because for 20 minutes Holland were all over them. They created a couple of decent chances in Van Persie. You know, everybody's tip for top scorer, or most people's, missed a really good one, and Robin went through, messed up a chance. And then kind of out of nowhere, Denmark scored this brilliant goal through Michael Crondelli, who I expect that not a lot of people knew anything about him, but it was...
Shearer.
Shearer, yeah.
Hey, smiling Alan Shearer.
Yeah, and a very shiny...
Shiny smiling.
Ball. Yeah, he's got rid of... He's given up the battle now.
Yeah.
Yeah. The long battle.
A new one begins. Yeah. Anyway, so you were saying about Crondelli.
Yeah, this brilliant dummy to get rid of... to send Heitinger and Van Bommel off into the distance, and then a really good finish past Stekelenburg. And from there, again, Holland made a load of chances. Van Persie missed more. Huntelaar came on, missed one. Robin hit the post. But they were flat though, and a bit, they just looked a bit fractured as a team. And
Holland flat. Anyway, 32 attempts. Can you believe that, Jacob Steinberg?
And only 5 on target.
Wow. Michael Gale says, "Here's your headline, Jimbo, for Bridleson. Denmark make a killing." Hey, yeah, TV reference. WJ Mellon says, "With the exception of Schneider, they were awful." Van Persie looks like a third-division striker. There's this myth in England because of that total football business that they always play amazing football, but not under Van Marwijk. Gutlessness of playing two defensive midfielders against a pretty average Danish team might cost them dear. It's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Yeah, well, in fairness, they weren't that bad. I mean, they obviously... the finishing was a bit comical, especially sort of Van Persie's sort of pirouette, sort of stumbling around like a pissed-up Darcy Bussell. It was just a weird game. I mean, you know, Holland are the team in this group. I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about Germany and Portugal later, but, you know, they're the team in the group that everyone's going to be sort of pointing at and laughing today. But they did create this unbelievable amount of chances. And I would say another day they'd have quite easily won that game.
They also should have had 2 penalties, one in the in the last minute for their handballs. Yeah. But Denmark defended really well. Agger and, his name.
Simon Kjær. Kjær, who has had a horrific season at Roma, and but Agger in particular was fantastic. Seemed to have the better of Van Persie for much of it, even though he was receiving a few elbows and slaps in the face from Van Persie. But it's quite interesting from the Dutch, because yesterday Van Marwijk was complaining that the grass needed to be cut because it was a little bit too a few millimeters too tall, and it was going to slow their game down, which is very important for Holland because they have a fast game. And to be fair, in that first half hour, they were quite slow, one paced, weren't they?
Yeah. But
quite ponderous on the ball, and. But I think that's an excuse, really.
How damaging a defeat is this?
I think they're quite possibly out because I think they'll lose to Germany on on Wednesday.
They got hammered by Germany in a friendly 3-0 recently. So I think it is live even let die. They have to win in midweek, otherwise it's curtains.
Does that not kind of help them though? Because again, like Germany tonight, were fairly comfortable for most of the game. When Portugal came at them, Germany looked incredibly poor. I mean, I know it was only the last sort of 10, 15 minutes that this happened, but they were giving up chance after chance after chance.
Well, in the first half as well, Scott.
Of the
Germany-Portugal game. Did you not think Portugal had chances in both halves?
Yeah.
With the centre forward, they might have...
I thought Portugal were a lot better in the second half of the game. But towards the end, it was particularly noticeable after the goal. And, I mean, that just might help if Holland go full pelt for Germany, which they kind of have to do now.
It's quite interesting, though, because like you were saying earlier, on balance, they created a hell of a lot of chances, and there was a lot that was reasonably good about that performance. And so what does Van Marwijk do? Does he change his team selection? Because, yeah, it's become sort of fashionable now to say that Holland are actually quite negative with De Jong and Van Bommel in midfield. And do you use Van der Vaart instead of one of those, instead of De Jong? Should Huntelaar be starting when he scored 38 goals for Schalke this year, top scorer in qualifying? Should there be a way for him to be shoehorned into the team? It's or do you just stick with it? Because it did.
One of the problems was Robin today.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like he was over that Champions League final where he was doing the whole cut in and onto his right, onto his left foot from the right, and then shoot over when someone else is better placed. And obviously he missed that penalty in the final, went really bad penalty. And tonight again, it was just that same old move of cut inside when other people clear for a decent shot, and he would just shoot over the whole time.
Yeah.
But all in all, the result pretty disastrous, but the performance possibly wasn't. We should give credit, James, to Denmark, who was, as Barry was predicting yesterday, an emerging force in these Euros.
Yeah, although the player everyone was focusing on pre-match was Eriksen, who for a large part of the game couldn't get into it. But I think Denmark have perhaps been underestimated in this group of death as being perhaps the weaker team. When in actual fact they qualified ahead of Portugal in their group. They beat Portugal. They drew against Portugal. They're ahead of Portugal in the FIFA ranking. So they're not the weakest team in the group. And I think, like Jacob was alluding to earlier, there are performances there today which you perhaps weren't expecting, like from Crone Daly. I thought was a threat throughout. Whenever he was on the ball, he looked quite dangerous.
Mm. Simon Poulsen was very good as well, and it was him that started off the move for the goal. In fact, he pretty much pulled all the Dutch defenders into all sorts of weird places.
If I ever set up a newspaper for old witches, I'll call it that, Crone Daily. Anyway, sorry, James.
They were quite bold. I mean, they stuck to this sort of philosophy of playing out from the back, which sometimes led to quite comical episodes because, the goalkeeper, Stefan Andersen, who, they lost their first-choice goalkeeper to injury, Thomas Sorensen, before the tournament. Andersen came in, played the ball out from the back and straight to Robin. Robin had that gilt-edged chance and had two players in front of him, hit the post. And from then onwards, you got the feeling it just wasn't Holland's day.
And it might well be Denmark. Some of the spirit of Jon Jensen lives on then. Well, next up for them, it is, of course, Portugal, who were beaten Saturday night in Lviv by Germany. And watching that game was Germany's very own Raphael Honigstein, who joins us now on the line. Rafa, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you, James?
Yeah, ever so well here. I'm not living in the crazy Big Brother Euro 2012 house with Guillaume and Gabriele, though, am I?
That is true, but Guillaume has actually moved out.
What?
In preparation of the Spain-Italy game, he's checked up with some family members of a big Spanish centre-forward who plays for Athletic Bilbao.
Really?
Yes, really.
He's actually staying in their house?
Yeah.
Wow. That's so connected. All right. And you're stuck with Gabriele then?
Yeah, which is much better.
Much better. Okay, cool. Any amusing anecdotes regarding, I don't know, socks left in the sink, toilet seats left up? I don't know. What have you got for us, Rafa?
No, I'm
someone touches someone else's sausage. I don't know. What? Nothing. Okay. It's all been
that
football.
That only happens when we're going out.
Yeah. Now, you watched the game, and what did you make of Germany's performance?
Well, it wasn't really convincing, and probably not really living up to the hype. People expected a lot more football from them. But I think they had a hard time. First of all, you could see that there was a bit of apprehension because the build-up hadn't quite been perfect. There was a bit of negativity sitting in. Jens Lehmann saying Germany will do well to get out of the group, let alone win anything. And, of course, right through the spine, some injury problems. And Portugal made it very, very difficult. And I think Germany were very, very concerned about their counter-attacking threat and were caught in the two minds a little bit and showed. And also, Mesut Özil had quite a poor game, and you really want him to run the show, and he didn't do that at all.
Right. I didn't see this game myself because I was busy watching a rival football occasion. But it did look to me, whenever I looked up, that the Portugal seemed to be streaming forward and setting up opportunity after opportunity. Another team might make more of those chances.
Yes, you're right. Although, you know, Germany will take a lot of heart from actually keeping a clean sheet because there were big question marks about this back four. And some people said, you know, they're not nearly as good enough as the rest of the side, and Germany will have huge problems. And, you know, of course you're going to concede one or two chances, and Manuel Neuer made a great save from Varela, who came on. But on the whole, I think they were very happy. You know, Mats Hummels came in, first ever tournament game. He was really outstanding, one mistake aside. Bartstuber was very solid as centre-back. And they'd rather take a win on the back of a less than convincing performance than a draw with wonderful football. So it's a good start, and it's also to know that you can still improve.
Mm. Scott, you were doing a minute by minute on this. Dirk says, "I'm sorry, but has there been a more jammy team than Germany in the last 10 years? Is that fair?"
It was one of those weird games that I thought Germany were kind of lucky, but only you can only qualify that they were just a little bit lucky. It should have been a draw. If Portugal had come at Germany throughout the match, it might have been different. They only did so when Germany scored, and obviously there was a stroke of fortune there because Gomez was about to get substituted for Klose. Literally, it was the next time the ball went out of play, so that didn't happen. There was a slight deflection on the goal, but you know, I mean, Germany were solid enough. They only gave up one, amazing chance, which was the save from Varela that Rafa just mentioned. Although, I mean, again, that was, you worry about like the Portugal team. They had Nelson Oliveira came on quite late, and he was fantastic. I mean, obviously, this prospect that we haven't seen that much of, and he set that up with an amazing run down the left, little reverse ball.
Nice. What changes do you expect then from Germany's point of view after 3 points in the first match?
Well, not too many really, because you could see even in this game that Löw is actually quite conservative when it comes to picking his lineup. I expected somebody like Götze or Royce to come on, you know, with the fresh legs. It looked very hot, it looked very humid. And he didn't make those changes at all. The only change he did was Klose, and then very late on, Toni Kroos, just to suck up a bit of time and keep the ball. But I don't think they're going to change anything. I think they're trying to get this win against the Dutch. And again, probably play in a similar manner because they are very afraid of what they can do on the counter-attack. And then perhaps start playing football from there onwards. It's a bit of a change, I think, from his philosophy, Löw. You know, he wants to play differently. The team didn't quite do the stuff he wanted to do, but I think he's now more pragmatic and more of a realist to know that under the conditions, and especially with Portugal, the way they were set up, is probably the best you can hope for. I don't think Germany were lucky in the sense that, you know, they didn't do enough to win this game. If you want to talk about luck and not creating any chances, I think we've seen quite more drastic incidents in very recent games where one team didn't do anything at all. So, they're very happy with that.
I can't believe you're still bitter about that, Rafa. You have to let it go.
I'm not bitter, but I think that kind of thing would have played on the minds of, you know, of the Bayern players.
Right.
They didn't want to expose themselves. You could see there was hesitation. You could see that Schweinsteiger was fairly defensive, didn't quite trust himself to go forward, didn't perhaps quite trust the back four. Boateng, I think, hardly ventured out of his own half. Lam didn't really give you that many attacking options as usual. So there was a bit of hesitation, I think. And, of course, you know, with recent experiences, you'd understand that.
Yeah, great for Gomez to get his goal then, though. There's a lot of people beginning to raise questions about him. I'm not sure he might have been himself.
Yeah, he wasn't very good. And there is still a big question whether he actually fits the style of Germany want to play. I think Klose is the better fit. He's a playing forward. He comes deep. He goes, makes runs. He'll help other people to take up positions because he's dragging the defence wide. Gomez doesn't do any of those things. He's very stationary. He's a physical presence. You could see the value of that. But I think that it's still going to be close. If Germany gets this further into this competition, I can still see Klose being the starter if he's fully fit, simply because he fits the blueprint of Löw much better.
So Germany are like Barry. They look better with their closer on. Hey! Doesn't get any better, does it? Rafa, that's terrific. How's the food been there in Warsaw?
Food's been very, very good, James.
Yeah?
Very, very good, yes.
Lovely.
We miss you.
Euro 2012 Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
And with that, he was gone. Cool. What would you say, based on your intake so far, James, the big differences between Ukrainian and Polish cuisine?
I've seen a bit more fried food.
Right.
Curd fritters.
Right. I wish that crowd would keep the noise down, really.
I know.
Fried fritters,
it's quite,
yeah.
Quite disrespectful.
Now.
In fact, the crowd in the Germany game.
Yes.
They were the announcer got very angry with them.
What did he say?
Well, the sections of fans were throwing objects at, I think it was Contral when he was taking a corner kick, and the announcer came on in several languages and said to stop doing it. And then there was a flare or a smoke bomb thrown behind Rui Patricio's goal, which could have distracted him.
Yep.
You sound like a disappointed teacher. He was sort of going, you're just ruining this for yourselves, lads.
he was a madman. He also counted down to kickoff after kickoff. It's like, shut your yacking neck, for Christ's sake, because you've got the microphone. But he didn't. All the way through the... It was just a few bits of paper, a few cups, was all. High jinks, they'd call it in rugby.
Right.
They threatened to cancel the game during it.
Yeah.
Right.
It's brilliant.
Magnificent. So he actually comes in and says, what did he say?
Well, he was just sort of bitching all the way through it, really. He was going, this game will have to stop if you continue to.
Because, I think last night you were complaining about the guy on the London Bridge. He just pressed one button and it just opened. This guy actually, he didn't have to do much. But
he made a show of it.
He made a show of it.
Oh, yeah. Good.
Like
good
it.
Stuff. All right. Sounds a little bit like Football Weekly / Euro 2012 Daily. And on the subject of filling up some time, producer Ben's very excited about Roger the Cat. Now, that's not a good name, is it, Roger the Cat?
No.
Yeah. Roger the Pussy would be even worse, of course. He's from Belgium, Roger the Cat, and as you probably know, he's one of those many predictive pets out there. But he's got quite a good record. He got Denmark, Holland right, and Poland, Greece, but then so did Barry Glendening. I don't know what you can make of that.
Speaking of names, there's some good names on squad lists around
it's
Euro
true.
2012.
Yeah. Let's hear some, James. I've got two here.
Befang Safari.
That's one of them. This list might be from you, actually. Two players on the Swedish squad, Berang Safari.
Yeah, who's Iranian, apparently.
Is
he? Obviously, he grew up in Sweden, so.
Right.
And Pontus. Pontus Wernbloom?
Pontus Wernbloom.
Yeah, it's a nice name.
Berang Safari. Cool. Here's a fact about Lviv. A kerosene lamp was invented there by pharmacists Johan Zohom and Ignacy Lukasevich. Hey, also, the world's first hot air balloon was launched in Lviv. Do you know when?
No.
1784. It's a very long time ago to be floating up in the air, isn't it? I've never been in a hot air balloon. I don't think I'd like to. They look quite scary to me.
You're in a basket.
Yeah.
That's just, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Caparo was posting in saying, rather than discussing the reasons why Lewandowski would win the Golden Boot, the preview pod should have considered which player would win the Golden Slice. Caparo suggesting it's going to be a fiercely fought competition between Samaras and Kurzakov, but he wondered if any red-hot candidates would appear on Saturday. Of course, they did, Van Persie amongst them. Passion Socks then said there is no golden slice battle because it's going to be Mario Gomez. But how wrong you turned out to be, Passion Socks. Interesting to see what happens on Sunday, of course. We've got two more big games for you as Group C swings into action. Croatia are taking on Ireland. What do we think about this one, Jacob? Is it going to be a low-scoring affair?
You would think so, with the way that Ireland set up under Trapattoni. You know, they're very defensive, pragmatic, and you know, there's a lot of call in amongst the Irish fans to include certain players. I think, you know, for example, Wes Houlihan, for one. When Stephen Ireland was available for selection, he would always ignore him until he decided he didn't want to play any part at all. And so they, you know, they'll be very prosaic, and I think they'll rely on set pieces. He doesn't really want his wingers to do anything or his fullbacks to go forward. They'll be looking for Robbie Keane or Kevin Doyle to come up with a goal.
Right.
His Totti, is that what he said?
That's what Trapp said, yeah. Robbie Keane's going to be his Totti, his sort of 9.5, false nine. It's going to just, you know, he's got those Totti-like skills.
Right.
But I'm looking forward to watching Croatia in this tournament because it's Slaven Bilic's last major tournament before he leaves his post. I think he's, on the whole, done quite a great job. He's a great character.
Do we know where he's going to go yet?
I think it's Lokomotiv Moscow.
Is it?
I don't know if it's confirmed, but that's apparently their suspicion, which is a bit of a shame because, I mean, he's been linked so often with posts here.
Yeah.
West Ham, yeah.
And also, you know, about tomorrow being perhaps a dull and drab goalless affair. I'm quite interested to see what Jelovic does because I think he's been fantastic for the last year. I mean, he scored, 24 goals for Rangers and Everton combined. I like the look of him. He's a handful.
I'm going to throw some numbers at you now.
Go.
Okay, unbeaten in 14, 11 of those clean sheets. And they've yet to lose a competitive game away from home under Giovanni Trapattoni. Also, this clash features the two smallest nations competing at Euro 2012, a great proportion of which, from Ireland's point of view, will actually be present at the game. Apparently, 20,000 fans are going to be making the trip. Actually, possibly not all at the Municipal Stadium, but there or thereabouts. So that could be a big factor. Scott, what do you think? Ireland, 3 points, top of the group?
Yeah, I think so. I think Ireland are going to qualify for the second place.
Really?
Yeah.
At whose expense? Who do you think is going to go through with them?
I think it's Spain's expense.
You think Spain are not going to make it out of the group?
Well,
Scott Murray?
See, what I'm working this on is, admittedly, it's not very good logic. But,
all right.
But Spain play Italy, obviously, tomorrow.
Yeah.
And Italy, for years and years and years, were Spain's bogey team.
Right.
Until quite recently, which I think they've won one game against them on penalties. And I just think at some point
Italy beat them not so long ago, of course, in a friendly, didn't they?
Well, yeah, but Scott's right. I mean,
should we finish your fuzzy bit of logic?
It's to flesh it out, in 1980, 88, and then in 2008, Spain played Italy, and they've never scored against Italy in normal time in a European Championship. So,
you see, there we go. Yeah. So you feel even more passionately.
It's going to be a 1-1 draw or something.
Italy will win 1-0. Italy will win 1-0.
My word. I don't like the sound of this.
I just think at some point Spain are going to look at Italy and think, hold on, they're Italy, we're Spanish. And it's going to go wrong. Because it just is. Teams have. I don't know why this happens in football, but it does. Teams just keep getting beaten by certain teams.
And there's that sort of, you know, historical fallacy of, you know, no team, I think, has ever won three major international tournaments in a row.
No.
I think Germany came close in 76. They lost in the final to Czechoslovakia. And there's that sort of question that these Spain players have won so much.
Yeah. To not get out of the group.
But you see, I mean,
after Italy, they then got to play Croatia and Ireland.
The only caveat I would give to all this is that I've tipped Holland to win Euro 2012,
right.
And I thought Spurs were going to win the league last season.
Okay.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
No, Scott, it's what we love you for. Dumbfounded by Idiocy, that's a poster name, not in any way a reaction to what you just said, says, looking forward to Spain against Italy. What does James Horncastle think of the possibility of De Rossi playing in defence? Because, bit of backstory here, the big concern for the Azzurri coming into this was, oh my word, what's going on at the back? Because they looked to Rasta Shambles in their final game before the start of the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, they've looked a shambles for quite some time now.
You say that, but they had a brilliant defensive record in qualifying.
Absolutely, the best across qualifying. I think they only conceded a couple of goals. Mm. But as you referenced earlier, Italy beat Spain 2-1 a year ago in Bari. And they played them at their own game. And it was a sort of validation of Prandelli's philosophy, which is to repudiate their tradition of being a negative, counter-attacking, catenaccio style of football, to being one that, you know, dominates possession, imposes itself on the game, and looks to win and convince. But so much has changed since then. I think a year ago, Prandelli had his best 11 in mind. Various players within that have had to drop out because of injury. Giuseppe Rossi, Cassano, obviously is back in the squad and was the top scorer in qualifying. But yeah, there's doubts about whether he can sort of maintain the intensity that's required at this level, given he's only recently come back from having a stroke he's only played five or six games towards the end of the season. So Italy have lost their last three games. They haven't scored in any of them. And obviously their preparation has been overshadowed by scandal.
But that's obviously a good thing for Italy as well, because whenever this happens, they go and win a major tournament.
Yes.
Which they've kind of looked...
Italy have had more scandals than they've had major tournament wins.
but they've been kind of quick to say, we do not need adversity to triumph.
Right.
We want to... We'd like to think that we could do well in normal circumstances, but...
Mm. But back to the question, what do you think about De Rossi playing there? Because he didn't shine when he stood in the back four for Roma this year, did he?
No, and I think he played four games at the back for Roma, and one was a 4-0 hammering at the hands of Juventus. I mean, this is the thing. Prandelli is on the brink of having to change his system to a 3-5-2, which will basically copy what Juventus used towards the end of the season and had great success with and won the Scudetto on the back of.
And he'll be using a lot of Juve players to do it as well.
He's got a block of Juventus players, seven Juventus players, so the thinking is that that system will be fresher in their mind than the 4-3-1-2 that they've used under Prandelli, which was, you know, three months ago before the friendly they played against, the final warm-up game they played against Russia. So I think De Rossi is emblematic of this idea that Prandelli wants to build from the back. He wants Buffon to play out to De Rossi, to kind of take the pressure off a bit of Pirlo, because I think that there is this feeling that if you stop Pirlo, you can stop Italy playing. Well, if you've got De Rossi bringing out the defence, he's going to be pressed and you might get space for Pirlo. But there are doubts, obviously, about De Rossi not being a natural centre-back. I think people thought that Italy's desire to experiment with three at the back were to be shelved when Barzagli got injured last week, who's obviously played there for Juventus. It was going to be a Juventus back three of Bonucci, Chiellini and Barzagli. So the main interesting point, I think, will be with Balotelli-Cassano, the possibility of that partnership, the bad boy partnership, because they get on really well off the pitch. They haven't yet seemed to hit it off on the pitch.
I thought they linked up quite well against Russia, but yeah, without actually scoring any of those goal things. So, yes, still very much a work in progress. Of course, we say there are one or two issues for Italy coming to this, but of course there are for Spain as well. No Carlos Puyol, no David Villa, and for a team who, for all their possession, struggled to score goals in their recent tournaments, the loss of Villa is a huge one, I suggest, Jacob.
The problem I have with Spain is that I don't see exactly where the goals are going to come from. I think they're almost verging on self-parody with the team. The indications that they're going to put out with Alonso and Busquets playing in that kind of double pivot, which I think probably one of them is fairly needless. You kind of negate Iniesta's best qualities by putting him in the front three on the left. I think that he's not quick enough probably to do that, or he's not going to score enough to do that. And then you've got Silva playing as well. So you've got a team full of passes, but then who's going to shoot? Who's going to score? Who's going to run at anybody? And it's just... those 1-0 wins could easily turn into 0-0 draws. Once it's 0-0 draw, you know, you see against what happened with Chelsea against Barcelona, it only takes one little moment, one little slip for someone to punish you.
Yeah, Gazzetta leaped on this because they totted up the goals scored by the strikers selected by various countries at the European Championship, and Spain's they're only sixth in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
So
is that including Villa's goals?
No, it's the strikers they've picked for this tournament.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think the
who was top then?
Holland.
And who was very, very much bottom? Oh, it'd be one of the Ukraine or something like that, would it?
Possibly, yeah.
Good. All right. Well, that's all pretty convincing. You realise, of course, we're all going to look really silly when Spain absolutely muller Italy come Sunday afternoon. Mm. But hey, that's football, and that's Football Daily. Have to say many thanks to you all for joining us. I'm particularly looking forward to Sunday's action. Of course, Sunday night we'll be back with another review, which will be available past midnight, thanks to the good offices of producer Ben, for your listening pleasure on Monday morning. In the meantime, it's many, many thanks to Scott Murray for joining us here, and Jacob Steinberg, and James Horncastle. And we'll be back tomorrow, so have a super time until then. Bye for now.
Euro 2012 Football Daily. Woof.